Cat Mayo Hour.
Welcome to the Pat Mayo Hour, week 8 waiver wire pickups by position. If you want the updated waiver wire pickups, as always, they'll be updated after the Monday Nighter and any time breaking news happens. So check that out on RotoExperts and SportsGrid.com. For on-demand versions, you can check it out anywhere you want. iTunes, Stitcher, Podomatic, up on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page. It's all there. The house cleaning out of the way. And the one thing you need to remember about the waiver wire pickup rankings before you say, well, that guy is owned in my league already. I don't know who's owned in your league. I have to go by percentage owned. So anyone less than 60% owned on ESPN.com gets eligible for the ranking. So, I mean, if number 1, 2, 3, and 4 are already owned in your league, why not just go down to 5? Joining me to break this all down, all the injuries, all the recap you need, Jake Seeley from RotoExperts.com. What's happening, man?
Not too much. Yeah, I can't believe we're already past the halfway point. It's so disappointing.
It's disappointing in one way. The season's going all right, so I suppose it's good if you have a good team. If you're like 0-8, I mean, that sucks. 0-7 at this point. Then you can probably pack it and start playing DFS every week if you still want the fantasy football experience to go along with it. I do want to ask you, the Sunday Nighter, the tie game between the Seahawks and the Cardinals, good game or bad game? Because I kind of enjoyed it.
You enjoyed it? I wouldn't even put that word in my vocabulary for that game last night because I was watching The Walking Dead. I have two TVs. And I tuned back and forth to it, and then actually about the fourth quarter, I said, you know what? I'm going to try and get to bed early tonight. I couldn't care less about the rest of this game. This is so frustrating to watch. There was some offense. It didn't result in touchdowns because, as you saw, the Cardinals did have a lot of yards in that game. But I'm so glad I went to bed because I missed the overtime, and I woke up to a tweet this morning where it says, all in kid must be laughing at this game, and it was true because the kickers ruined the game. They can't kick field goals, and it ended up being 6-6 tie for field goals. This is, see, in real life, kickers suck too.
Yeah, it was funny. A guy that I have on Twitter, he ended up tweeting out a picture of a bet that he made. He bet it 250-1 in game that it would be a tie, and his buddy ended up betting it 2,500-1 before game that it would end up being a tie. Now that is a payday. It was a 5-figure payday for him, a 6-figure payday for the other guy. I mean, that's really where it's at. Now everyone's going to be betting ties, and another one's not going to happen for like 7 years.
No, that takes some cojones there. Kudos to that guy. If he's one of your followers, he should take you out to lunch with that.
No, it's never going to happen. I mean, it's not like I recommended the tie.
Oh, I thought that he was giving you credit, like you talked about it earlier in the day. All right, yeah, never mind.
Then no, he just screenshotted it. I was like, hey, this is awesome.
Okay. Yeah, that is pretty awesome. That takes a lot of guts because, like you said, it's going to happen. Wait, what, maybe 2 years from now we'll get another one?
Maybe 2 years. We'll see how that ends up going. Let's get to the running backs right away at the top. Jaquizz Rodgers comes in at number one, clearly. I mean, as long as Doug Martin is out, then you need to be playing Jaquizz Rodgers. He's followed on that list by Chris Thompson, then Mike Gillisley, Matt Asiata, Niall Davis, Devontae Booker, Bilal Powell, Chris Ivory, Alfred Morris, and Derrick Henry. Round out the top 10. So let's go back to the top, talk about Doug Martin a little bit. He was expected to be back coming off the bye week with the hamstring problem. Obviously, that was not the case. And Jaquizz Rodgers gets the start. He gets all the volume like he did 3 weeks ago at Carolina. If Doug Martin continues to miss time, just based on opportunity alone, does that make Jaquizz Rodgers like a top 10 guy?
I think he's in the conversation. If you look at, especially over the next 2 weeks, and you have six teams on bye, he's almost going to have to be there if Doug Martin is out. But even if we had everybody playing all 32 teams, I think he's still in the conversation of being an RB1 for a long time. That as long as Doug Martin's not playing in games, you said it, the opportunity is there. When you're getting this many touches and this many opportunities, it's hard not to be at least semi-productive, and he's been better than the average. If you look at Jeremy Langford, the argument for him at the beginning of the season was he's seeing 90% of the snaps, so he's going to have value. Well, he's performed better than Langford did for the Bears, and I think that's why you have to take that into account. And actually, if you look at Doug Martin, I would say if you're an owner, you're not feeling very good now because his stock is starting to take a little hit. The big assumption was when Charles Sims went down, oh, this is good for Doug Martin because Charles Sims had standalone value and he took some of it away. But Jaquizz Rodgers has proven over these last two games that he deserves a share of that, and he might even deserve a little bit more share than Charles Sims does because let's try and keep Doug Martin healthy for the rest of the season. So I'm a little concerned if I'm a Martin owner.
In terms of snap count, the Kizmaster ended up playing 51 snaps. Peyton Barber, clearly the handcuff to Rodgers, should Martin continue to be out for any extended period of time. He's the one who came in cleanup duty, ended up getting all the carries between the tackles. He had 18 snaps played, and Antoine Smith only played 7. He was used here and there. He's more of a gadget guy. He's so fast that eventually they're going to try to give him 2 or 3 balls in space every game. That's about the extent of what he's going to do. Let's talk about Doug Martin, though. You mentioned the schedule, and especially towards the end of the season, week 16, week 14, they get the Saints, and you can run all over the Saints. Would it be prudent to maybe throw out some scumbag offers for Doug Martin right now, knowing he's still injured, but hopefully you get him back if you're just stashing away pieces for a fantasy championship run?
If you're being smart, that is definitely the way to do it. You look at basically anybody on this team, you're thinking about if you've been playing streaming quarterbacks to make sure you hold on to Winston for those 2 weeks. If you look at anybody on this team, really, that Cameron Brate was going to have great value towards that stretch run. But yes, I think that Doug Martin owners are not feeling very good right now. They're probably a little hesitant. No, I don't think anybody out there is going to say, yeah, go ahead and take him for garbage, because everybody knows nowadays with the knowledge out there to not just sell for garbage, but at the same time, they're going to be frustrated. They probably need help. If Doug Martin is questionable throughout the week, they're probably going to start worrying, well, is Doug Martin even going to play for this week? So, yes, you throw out a lower-end offer. You know, maybe somebody you just talked about on your list, the Matt Asiata, Chris Ivory, and something else, maybe a wide receiver that helps him. I would definitely go out there and try to acquire him now, just because of the fact that even if it's a 50-50 split, which I don't think it would be, I think Doug Martin's going to see a bigger share if he's healthy. But a 50-50 split going against the Saints is better than a 100% split against half the teams in the NFL.
Do you think that Doug Martin ends up playing this week?
I'm leaning towards no, only because they signed Smith late in the week, and that leads me to believe that maybe they're kind of thinking long-term that it could be another week or two, because if not, they would have just went into the game like they did last week with Quiz and Peyton Barber and just been fine with that.
Yeah, and I mean, this week is Oakland. We saw Spencer Ware run all over the Raiders, so it's a decent situation. And frankly, you mentioned the big thing is it's at the bye weeks. There's 6 teams on bye, so if you have anyone on the Rams, Dolphins, Steelers, Giants, 49ers, or Ravens, then you're going to have some patchwork to do should anything happen this week. And Jaquizz Rodgers, obviously, if he's still available in your league, get a better league. But, you know, go pick him up in the meantime and play him this week against Oakland if there's no Doug Martin. Chris Thompson is next on the list. And for like 3 weeks in a row, he's outsnapped Matt Jones, but it's been Matt Jones that has put up the better fantasy performances. Not the case this week, because Matt Jones was putting the ball on the ground, because that's something that Matt Jones does. Guy's got a case of fumbleitis. And while he didn't get, you know, completely benched, Chris Thompson ended up seeing the bulk of the workload, especially with the Redskins down in that game and having to pass. He got himself involved in the passing game to the biggest extent as he has so far this season. I like Chris Thompson. I think Chris Thompson obviously has more value in a PPR. He's probably never going to be a guy that carries the ball 20 times a game. But between some of his carries and his work in the passing game, he can get up around, let's say, 14 to 18 touches a game. And if that's the case, especially in PPR leagues where those receptions are far more valuable, I think that Chris Thompson, I don't want to say a must add, but he is a very valuable guy to have on your team, especially in deeper leagues.
No, I'll actually take it to a must add. I'm with you on this because it's Matt Jones. And I know I hate when people say, well, if you take out this game, if you take out this run, this player didn't do this or wouldn't have done, you know, forget that AJ Green yesterday. If you didn't take out that fluke Hail Mary, he would have, you know, just an okay day. Just stop with that stuff. But at the same time, when you're evaluating players, you do take that into account from a knowledge standpoint. And the fact is, Matt Jones last week, if he took away that long run, his rest of his day was decent, not great. And the fact is, he has fumbling issues, fumbled again at the goal line, as you mentioned. I think if you looked at the game flow, they started going to Chris Thompson more. You mentioned the snap count. You mentioned the carries are higher. I think they're going to start leaning towards him a little bit more. No, I don't think he's always going to take 60 to 70% of the workload, but I'm saying that even a 50-50 split where Matt Jones is maybe used in more of a Chris Ivory role between the tackles, and not saying that they're the same type of player, but just the fact that Chris Thompson deserves to see more. And I think that if you're going to say that James White and Bobby Rainey, obviously in deeper leagues, but actually go back to Shane Vereen before that. If you say those guys need to be owned, especially in PPR leagues, I think Chris Thompson's ahead of them just because I think he's going to be getting more touches with the way that Matt Jones has been playing.
Yes, I completely agree. The work on the ground kind of super supersedes everything else that those sole pass catchers do, whether it's Bobby Rainey, whether it's Travaris Cadet, Josh Ferguson, those types of guys. At least Chris Thompson's getting himself involved in the regular flow of the game. I mean, if they're down, it probably benefits Chris Thompson a little bit, but even if they're ahead, it's not like he's going to be useless, almost like those other guys become if they're put into that situation. So let's just kind of compare Jakiz Rogers to Chris Thompson, because I think this depends on what your team looks like right now. Do you need a running back to play for next week only and there's no Doug Martin? You take Jakiz Rogers. I think if you're looking a little bit in the long term, you probably want to take Chris Thompson.
Yeah, I definitely agree, because here's the one thing about the Redskins. We talk about it all the time. What is this? This is a pass first, pass happy offense. And who fits that role better? It's Chris Thompson. So even if Matt Jones gets his fumbling corrected, we're still going to see enough of Chris Thompson to have continuous value. So yes, if you're thinking long term, if you need somebody for this week and next week and down the road, maybe you're struggling at running back, maybe you had Jordan Howard and now you're facing that Kadeem Carey situation, you go pick up Chris Thompson and start him over Jordan Howard.
All right, so Mike Gillisley was kind of the big story of Sunday morning. LeSean McCoy was dealing with a hamstring injury. He was basically out, then he was in, then he was starting. And then, of course, he left the game because he retweaked his hamstring again. I could see him missing weeks here. All these hamstring problems that we've seen crop up with running backs so far have resulted in multi-week injuries. And LeSean McCoy is the only guy that seemingly did not fall fate to that, but, you know, he probably should have. As the, you keep him out, get him healthy, he's your best player. You think you want him close to 100%, not that whatever he was yesterday, he was like 30% or something like that. But Mike Gillisley would be the guy to step into that opportunity. That didn't come to fruition yesterday because McCoy was just on the field so much. I have him at number three right now because I don't know if McCoy is going to miss time. And as we've seen, if McCoy is active, no matter how hurt he is, they're going to end up playing him, kind of rendering Mike Gillisley a bit useless. But I think he is a valuable handcuff to have and someone you could potentially play the next 2 weeks. Would you have him higher or lower than the rest of the guys?
I would put him in between Rodgers and Thompson if McCoy is out, which I think is what we're assuming, but I understand waiting to find out because this team seems hell-bent on putting him out there no matter what. Everybody sat back and said it, and it's just so weird. I know that, you know, these coaches are in the NFL for a reason, and they're smart, and they know what's going on, but it seems like the rest of America all knew, except for Rex Ryan, that don't play LeSean McCoy. Oh, look, what a surprise. He aggravated the injury. Everybody saw that coming, and it just didn't make a lot of sense, too. If you look at, hey, look, they got the Patriots coming up. Maybe you want McCoy healthy for this game because that's the only shot you have at winning that matchup. But, you know, if he's out, which is assumed, I think Gillisley jumps him. My only concern is something we talked about yesterday in the morning show when we were talking about it, is Gillisley's only opportunity as a lead running back last year, 24 carries, 28 yards. And yes, it was against the Jets. And yes, I know the Jets' run defense last year was ridiculous. But at the same time, you can't just ignore the fact that this guy averages over 6 yards per carry, over 10 yards per carry last year. And then his first true test, he does absolutely nothing. And 1 yard per carry, no matter who you're playing against, is pretty abysmal. So I like him. I just don't know that you're going to all of a sudden say, like, let's say LeSean McCoy's out. I don't think you're going to get an RB1 on your hands all of a sudden.
I think you're going to get a fringe RB1 just based off the volume, because there's no guys getting that many carries consistently week to week.
Reggie Bush? Yeah, he stole the touchdown.
He did steal the touchdown. I actually did want to talk about Reggie Bush. If LeSean McCoy is out, does Reggie Bush have value in, like, deeper PPR leagues?
I actually think he does. If you're talking about even a 12-teamer with six teams on a bye in a deep PPR league, I think that you could find Reggie Bush sliding into your flex position just because of the opportunity. And that's the biggest thing, is I don't know that Gillisley sees 80% of the snaps, maybe 60 to 70, but I think Reggie Bush would see an increase. Not that I'm not saying go get Reggie Bush and plug him in your lineup. He's going to be great. It could be Gillisley getting 20 carries and Reggie Bush getting 3 and maybe hopefully getting a touchdown, and you're not going to want that in your lineup. But at the same time, we haven't really seen a game yet without LeSean McCoy and what they truly plan to do. And yesterday, later on in the game, Reggie Bush was out there for a few more snaps. He didn't get a lot of touches. So I'm just not confident in how this entire situation breaks out 100%.
There's a lot of people in this industry who are not willing to admit when they are wrong. And as soon as I make a mistake, listen, I will for sure admit that, you know, I have a problem. You know what? Listen, I was incorrect, but, you know, that's never happened before. So I'm going to continue to move on from that. But Jordan Howard, last week we were talking about as a top 10 running back for the rest of the season. Turns out that may not be the case. You mentioned Kadeem Carey's name. He ended up playing more snaps than Howard in that Thursday nighter. Now, it was a brutal matchup against the Packers. It turns out that not every team has Ezekiel Elliott and can just run them over. Turns out they're actually pretty decent. Maybe one of the best in the league at stopping the run. But now we're into a situation where John Fox apparently is playing the hot hand, although Howard had played so well for the 2 weeks previous and got like 90% of the snaps. What do you do moving forward? Do you pick up Kadeem Carey? Do you say, you know what, Jordan Howard is now a super buy low because people are talking about cutting the guy? Jeremy Langford might be back in like 2 weeks to throw another wrench into the situation, although he's got awful. What do we do with Jordan Howard now, and how does he rank out the rest of the season?
If you own him, you have to hold on and just swallow it and accept what you got in that situation. If you don't, I do think he's a good buy low because, yes, I think people are already on the they want to cut him. I had people on Sunday saying, can I cut Howard for blank? And it wasn't that great of options. You know, and that's, I think that's the situation is people are frustrated with what happened. And we said, look, John Fox was honest. He said going into the season, I'm going to play the hot hand approach. And we're like, ah, okay, he's crazy, whatever. Nobody really does that. Look at what happened with the Giants last year. It doesn't work for anybody. And Langford came out and wasn't doing very good. And we're like, okay, Jordan Howard's going to get his shot. And then he got hurt anyway. And we're like, okay, yay, it's Jordan Howard time. And don't get me wrong, I was out there with you saying he could be a fringe RB1 the rest of the way. And I thought that he would be able to do a little bit better against the Packers because they were weaker against, you know, strong runs up the middle versus the outside. So I was like, okay, this is a game that should help him get back on track too. And all the Kadeem Carey love is going to go out the window. And he went the exact opposite way, and he went with Kadeem Carey, and he rode the hot hand, and he did exactly what he said he was going to do. And now you mentioned you have the third opportunity coming out that's going to throw a wrench into the situation of a full-blown committee when Jeremy Langford is ready. Granted, he's not any good, but if, you know, Kadeem Carey comes out and has three carries for 2 yards and Jordan Howard comes in and fumbles, you can see Langford for the rest of the game once he's healthy. Very next week, to forget when Langford's healthy, next week alone, Kadeem Carey could come out 5 carries for 4 yards, and we see Jordan Howard for the rest of the game, or vice versa. So you have to hold on to Howard, but at the same time, I would definitely try to buy low just in case Kadeem Carey struggles for 2 games in a row.
Now that Brian Hoyer's out for at least 8 weeks with a broken arm, and Jay Cutler's, now he could be back next week, we don't know.
Oh, he's going to magically heal up. He'll be ready this week.
It seems like he's been ready to come back for like 3 weeks, and they've been like, Jay, listen, go outside, have a cig, just, you know, deal with it. When we need Jay, you can come back in. But if not, let's say Matt Barkley starts. There's no way you can start any of these guys, is there?
No, I don't think there's any way you can start anybody on this team. That includes Alshon Jeffery. Maybe Alshon Jeffery is a wide receiver 3, only because we have 6 teams on bye, but I don't know that I would start anybody on the Bears, Zach Miller, the rest of them included.
If Jay Cutler is back, how do you think that affects Cam Meredith? Because it seemed like he was sort of a product of Brian Hoyer kind of zoning in on him. Now, we know that there is enough room in this offense with Jay Cutler to support multiple good receivers. We've seen it before. And we'd expect Alshon Jeffery's stock to go back up if Jay Cutler's around. But Cam Meredith has sort of emerged without Jay Cutler. If Jay Cutler's back under center, where does that leave Cam Meredith? Is he still like a top 30 guy? Because, I mean, for like a 3-week period, the guy was leading the league in targets.
I'm a little hesitant on that, and the reason I was hesitant on Cameron Meredith for the long term, like, he was a must-own, he was a must-start. Don't get me wrong, I'm not going to say that I was saying anything different. What I was saying, though, there was a little bit of concern of long-term value, similar to Tajay Sharpe, as somebody who hadn't been seen by a lot of defenses. Cameron Meredith is a converted quarterback. He has the skill set when you talk about his body type, his speed, his ability. But he still is limited. He's still learning the position as well as too. So if defenses know a little bit about him, it could be similar to Sharp where, you know, oh, he took everybody by surprise in the preseason. But now that we know about him, we see what his deficiencies are. Now we can defend him. So if you look at last week, I think it was the fact that you just put a strong corner on him. You kind of take away some of his ability. So Jay Cutler coming in might be able to capitalize on his talent a little bit more. But Jay Cutler might go to Bellamy. He might go to Zach Miller more and just target the heck out of Alshon Jeffery like we were all hoping, which might be a really good thing for those Jeffery owners that held on all this time. But we don't really know who Jay Cutler is going to go to. And I don't know that's a guarantee that Meredith is the second best option on this team, because we might have seen it. That's the concern in the back of my mind. We might have seen a blip of what he can do, but he might not have the upper end value as a real player to succeed every single week.
Another thing, I mean, if we're going to continue going on the Pat is always wrong train, I said do not use a top waiver ad unless you desperately need a quarter or running back on Jay Ajayi. Now he posted another 200-yard game, and I feel like an idiot. He did have leg cramping at the end of the game, but with Miami going on bye, I assume he's going to be fine coming out of that, although he does get the Jets the first week back. So, you know, if he's coming off bye, maybe he doesn't have a great game against the Jets, you can go bye Ajayi. But here's the breakdown in snaps. Ajayi, 47, Foster, 18, Damian Williams, who ended up scoring a touchdown after that cramping, with 7 snaps, and then Kenyon Drake with 2. What is going on here with Jay Ajayi? I mean, you love Jay Ajayi coming out of the draft last season, the knee problems and the usage kind of gave you some pause coming into this year and just the way that Adam Gase was running this backfield. Now it seems like he's established himself as the number one. Where does you think he ranks the rest of the season? Is he a running back one for sure, like lock and load it, you're good to go? Or is this a situation where he's on a hot run right now, one bad game could put him back into this committee?
I actually think he's a fringe RB1. I think he's on the lower end. Actually, he might actually even be in the RB1 if I sat back and actually tried to rank everybody out, because the thing with Ajayi and what I loved about his talent is just he's very explosive. He's very talented. He can run the ball between the tackles and outside. The one deficiency he has, and as we've seen already, and if you look at yesterday, you look at the box score, where he wasn't involved is the passing game. He's still not very good as a pass catcher. You want to think of somebody, think of like Alfred Morris. They're not exactly the same player, but for the longest time, Alfred Morris was putting up huge numbers, but he wasn't involved in the passing game just because that's not his ability. And Ajayi has been trying to evolve in that fashion, but there's a reason the Dolphins weren't using him last year and were a little bit hesitant this year, is because that's the area of his game where he really hasn't stepped forward, and it includes pass blocking. And if you want somebody to protect Ryan Tannehill, which whatever for Ryan Tannehill being your future or not, hopefully not for their sakes, you still need that ability out there. So I think that's the only limitation you have from him being a rock solid, locked in top 10 running back, is because if you're not on the field, the opportunities aren't going to be there as much. That being said, you can't ignore the fourth running back of all time to post back-to-back 200-yard games. He is extremely talented. He will be their option going forward. I just see, you know, especially coming out of the bye. There's no way. I guarantee you right now, there's no way he posts a third straight game with 200-plus rushing yards. I think Foster is going to get mixed in a little bit more as he gets healthier. But if Foster goes down again, they really only have Kenyon Drake. So it's just the fact of, just again, think of Alfred Morris in his best season, and that's pretty much what you have a good gauge of what he can do.
Matt Asiata has a chance to become the Minnesota starter, but the problem with this is Jerick McKinnon's dealing with an ankle injury. He suffered it in the first half against the Eagles, came back after half, re-aggravated it, left the game, and then we didn't see him again. There's no extent on what his injury is at right now, but I mean, he could end up missing this game. But again, the issue is it's a Monday night game, so when you have to make those critical decisions on Sunday morning, you may not know the status of Jerick McKinnon if he's a game time decision. If he's out, then you just play Matt Asiata. That's no big deal against the Bears. But yesterday, it was very clear that Ronnie Hillman was not getting too involved once McKinnon was out. 57 snaps for Matt Asiata. Jerick only played 16. Ronnie Hillman with 4. And I think that Asiata does need to be owned regardless if Jerick is healthy or not, just because we know that he gets this role should anything happen to McKinnon. And then he probably he's been a better fantasy performer than Jerick anyway so far, despite playing like half the snaps of Jerick.
Yeah, because he's the red zone option. This is really what it comes down to. You score a touchdown, just it's simple math. Do it in your head. You score a touchdown, you need 60 yards to make up for that. And Jerick McKinnon just not being on the field enough because he's sharing snaps with Asiata. It's very hard, as talented as he is, to put up those 60-plus yards, 70, 80 yards, to make him a better value than Asiata, because if Asiata scores, he probably got you at least 10, 20, 30 yards. So it's going to be tough to have a better day. The only problem is, again, predicting touchdowns. But if McKinnon's missing extended time, Asiata becomes not only a must-own, but probably a must-start in most leagues because of the volume. And then you add in the rushing ability for the touchdowns in this offense, he's going to be in the RB2. I find it hard for him to not be a top 20 running back if McKinnon misses time.
Yeah, I'm with you on that page as well. That's why he's up there in the rankings. But again, if Jerick doesn't miss time, you're probably not going to end up playing him unless you're desperate at the position, and which you may be with six teams on bye and a decent matchup up against the Bears. Let's break down this Green Bay situation, because I can't quite wrap my mind around it. So Eddie Lacy has an ankle injury. He's on IR. We don't need to worry about Fat Eddie anymore. So then they go trade for Nile Davis, but then they promote Don Jackson from the practice squad. Jackson ends up being the lead back for the game as announced before it, and then he does absolutely nothing, hurts his hand. We don't see him again. He ends up playing 6 snaps. Nile Davis traded for, but he only gets one day to learn the playbook. Clearly, he wasn't going to do much. He only ends up playing 5 snaps. So instead, they go with Ty Montgomery in the backfield, and Montgomery ends up just crushing it out of the backfield. 9 carries, ends up playing 48 snaps. Randall Cobb was back there as well. He ends up playing 9 snaps and getting some carries. Now, this has led to Montgomery getting the carries on the ground, but in particular, he's just getting a lot of short passes out of the backfield. He ends up with 13 targets, all of them on little dump-offs, very high percentage catches. So in PPR leagues, he's looking like a must-start guy every single week that he has this role. But how long is he going to have this role? Does Nile Davis make some inroads this week? When James Starks comes back in like 2 weeks, is he going to end up with this job? Like, what's going on in the Green Bay backfield? If I had to guess, I would say they're going to ride this Montgomery thing out for a bit. You might even see this work back in once everyone is healthy. But I think that Nile Davis is worth owning in case they just say, you know what, Nile, your job now, because we know James Stark sucks.
We do know that, and we also know that Ty Montgomery is not set to be a true running back in this backfield, as we saw what happened at the goal line. You don't want Ty Montgomery trying to plug it in, and you don't want him trying to run those yards to begin with, especially given his size. You're just asking for him to get hurt to be that kind of option. Not only that, but let's add the next level and say if you're a defense and facing this team, the Packers have to know if you're using Ty Montgomery in the backfield, you're going to be passing the ball 50 times a game. You're making things easier on the defense to plan for you, and that's really what the truth is here. Is the smart approach for the Packers would to be start using Nile Davis more in the backfield when James Starks comes back, even though he's not any good. He's among the worst if you look at him as a starting running back, if you put his numbers into that fashion. He still has to be involved at least a little bit because you want some semblance of a running game. That all being said, Nile Davis is worth owning because of the potential, and it's the same similar potential to Eddie Lacy in the fact that they're by far opposite ends of the spectrum when it comes to players, but the touchdown ability because the offense scores a lot every single week, or most weeks, I should say. That appeal is there, but this isn't a team that runs the ball that much even when Eddie Lacy was healthy. So you have to temper your expectations, whoever ends up leading this backfield, if it is Davis, if it is James Starks, whatever it is. But I am with you. I do think that Ty Montgomery sees a little bit more time this week, maybe again next week, but I think the smart play here is to go get Davis because they do want a semblance of a real offense.
The Ravens head into the bye week not quite sure what they're doing at any part of the field. They just look horrific on offense. Maybe it has to do with Flacco's shoulder. It was banged up. He just looked off against the Jets and a defense that everyone was taking advantage of through the air. He could not. And, of course, you can't do anything on the ground against the Jets because they do have a really good run defense. But Terrence West leads the way with 21 snaps. But all of a sudden, a guy I just didn't even think was in the league anymore, Lorenzo Taliaferro, outsnaps Kenneth Dixon almost 3-1. What's going on here? Like, should we just drop Kenneth Dixon?
I think you can. I was telling people last week, I hate to do it. You know I'm a big Kenneth Dixon fan. I thought he was the most talented option on this team when they drafted him. That being said, injuries are a huge detriment to rookies. It's just the fact that you're trying to get involved as a rookie. You're trying to learn the playbook. You're trying to make a name for yourself. And to have that extra step behind, to have that delay, is really a significant factor. Terrence West, you know, had been really good up until last week. Kyle Juszczyk has been involved a whole bunch. And so I'm looking at the situation, and you see Taliaferro, you have to say that Kenneth Dixon is just going to be a long-term option, that maybe West needs to get hurt, maybe even Taliaferro needs to get hurt, that he's just down the road plan maybe for the future. And if you need an option out there, heck, everybody we've talked about so far, I would drop Kenneth Dixon for. If you need help at wide receiver, drop Kenneth Dixon. People are throwing at me at Twitter, and they say this person, this person, this person, this person, and Dixon's usually in the mix, and I'm saying I hate to do it, and I hate to swallow the fact that you're dropping somebody of his talent, but Dixon's the first to go. He's not getting the opportunities, and whether or not it's because he would get hurt, he needs a lot to happen to have any fantasy value.
Tevin Coleman left the Atlanta game with a hamstring problem. We keep bringing up these hamstring that usually ends up dealing with a multi-week injury, which is just fantastic news for Devonta Freeman owners, especially in a bad matchup against Green Bay this week. You think with a monopoly on all the touches in the receiving game on the ground and the goal line, that Devonta Freeman can get himself back up to being like a top five-ish running back, especially in an offense that's scoring so many points right now. And Jamaal Charles is the other one. He was listed as like doubtful for a bit, upgraded to questionable, ended up playing, but he only ended up playing two snaps. He cannot be started until it's clear that he's healthy, right?
I think so, unless you get this week. And I'm saying healthy is, we can find out if he's healthy before the game, but it would have to be practices on Thursday and Friday, not a limited participant on Wednesday or held out Wednesday, and then he's running on the sidelines on Thursday. And then, no, he needs to practice on Thursday and Friday for you to have any trust in putting him in your lineup on Sunday. If he practices on Friday and missed Thursday, if you're looking for the upside, if you have a very thin roster, it is 16s on bye, you might be able to get him that flex, but understand that you can see what we did yesterday and get a zero. That's very possible. But I would want to see a Thursday and Friday practice before I put him in with confidence.
The 11 to 20 range for running back pickups after those handcuffs that we talked about, like Ivory, Morris, Henry, it goes Tim Hightower, Cameron Artis Payne, Deion Lewis and Thomas Rawls, who are both expected back in a couple weeks. More so Rawls than Deion Lewis at this point, because Deion Lewis hasn't practiced yet. Rawls probably 2 to 3 weeks away, but looking at a timeshare at best. Then it goes DeJuan Harris on the Niners, Zach Zenner on the Lions, Andre Ellington, Rob Kelly, Dwayne Washington, and Fozzie Whitaker. I want to stop on DeJuan Harris for a second, because I know the Niners are going into bye weeks, but the shoulder injury for Carlos Hyde, I mean, every time this guy gets hurt, it just turns out that he's out for a lot longer than you think. We saw that last season. It's like, oh, yeah, Carlos Hyde's going to be back next week. And then, you know, 6 weeks later, oh, yeah, Carlos Hyde's out for the season. I would expect him to be back going into week 9, but who knows? And from what I saw yesterday, based on snaps, based on performance, it seems like DeJuan Harris, not Mike Davis, would be the running back that you would, I guess, want to own if you wanted to own a San Francisco running back.
Yeah, I think you should have put want in quotes there. I don't know that I really want to own any of them. Mike Davis, you know, got the touchdown, looked decent. But as you mentioned, he's also somebody that hasn't impressed really in his opportunities. Harris is somebody that's done had value for this team in the past and has done decent things for them. It's surprising to see the use of Sean Drawn in the mix, too, and the fact that, you know, this guy was impressive last year in his time with no Carlos Hyde. Somebody who can be used more than just in the passing game, and his usage has been concerning. So I don't know that you really want to use anybody. If you forced my hand, I might go with Harris just because of what you said, if you're looking at yesterday's game and the performance there. But I don't think this is any type of situation you can put confidence in. Let's assume Carlos Hyde being out, I think we could see a real blown committee here, and that's really what we're kind of talking about earlier with the Bears. It's just this backfield that you might just guess the wrong guy every single week.
Geno Smith gets hurt, Ryan Fitzpatrick comes into the game, and then all of a sudden, Matt Forte has a ton of value again after seeing Bilal Powell sneak up and even play more snaps than Forte over the past 3 weeks. Yesterday, it was all Matt Forte, and we're looking at a situation where he played 57 snaps, Powell just 9. Is this the time to sell high on Matt Forte if you can get his value back?
Oh, absolutely. No question about it, because what's the key to yesterday, too? 30 carries. Well, it's the same thing that happened earlier this year in that huge game. Oh, 30 carries. You know, no matter what the team says, they don't want Matt Forte carrying the ball 30 times a game. At this point of his career, with this kind of wear and tear, you're just asking him to break down if you're going to do this to him every single week. And add in the fact that, as you just mentioned, the 2 weeks before that, it was more Bilal Powell, and he was very ineffective, Matt Forte was, in the touches he was receiving of these yards per carry. And even yesterday, 30 carries for 100 yards. That's not that great when you talk about a yards per carry. So this is absolutely sell high now. I think there'll be some smart owners out there who won't pay that much for him. But if you can get top 15 running back value and find some way to help your team, I would definitely do it, because you're selling off the risk. Even if it's just a 1-for-1 where maybe, and I know you hate the guy, but if you trade for Mark Ingram, I'd rather take Mark Ingram because you sold off the risk and Ingram's at least going to get you 6 points in standard every single week.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to bring that sort of voodoo to my team where, you know, it's going to look good for 2 weeks and then all of a sudden my team's scoring negative points because my team is cursed with Mark Ingram. Can't have that. You don't want your team to be in a worst place. But I agree with the logic behind it of trying to trade him 1-for-1, maybe get a running back coming off a down week and be like, oh, Matt Forte is back. He's so great. Just like everyone thought about, you know, after week 2.
Would you trade Matt Forte for Doug Martin?
No, I'd keep Forte in that situation. I just don't think you would have to pay Forte prices to get Doug Martin.
Okay. I just thought it was an interesting situation some people might think about.
I think it is. I mean, if you want to trade Matt Forte for Doug Martin and something else that can help your team, that might be the type of trade that you would want to look at.
I agree. Yeah.
Last thing with running backs, the Lions situation, Zach Zenner and Justin Forsett end up splitting duties as the Lions lead back, despite the fact that Zenner ended up playing more snaps, but the production was about similar. The reason that he's so down on this list, both, I mean, he's at number 16 in the running back rankings, is that either Theo Riddick or Dwayne Washington will likely be back next week. If that's the case, I just don't see any of them really having value at all.
No, if Dwayne Washington's back, now you're at a committee. If Theo Riddick's back, well, we know what he's going to do. He's going to dominate the pass catching role, and he's going to be involved in regular rushes as well, too. So if Theo Riddick's back, it's truthfully the value is all his, and everybody else just forget about him. If Dwayne Washington is back as expected, now we're in the same situation we've been talking about with so many of these backfields at this point, is it's a committee. Of all of them, I'm with you. I would take Zenner because he looks like the goal line option, even if Dwayne Washington is back, but I'd be in trouble. If I'm starting one of these running backs, I'm probably 2-5.
Yeah. I mean, I had to start Zach Center yesterday, but that's only because I thought he was going to get like 20 carries, which he didn't. But, you know, it's a circumstance.
He got the touchdown.
He did save the day. You know, it's like anyone who played Mike Davis. He got a touchdown. And you're like, ah, well, this is probably more than I expected him to end up doing. So it's all good.
Guys, you don't need to choose between price and quality to get an amazing and affordable shave. DollarShaveClub.com is the answer. And to prove how amazing their shave really is, right now, they're going to give you the first month for free to join the club. DollarShaveClub.com delivers amazing razors right to my door for a third of the price of what those greedy razor corporations charge. Seriously, I have no reason to deal with the drugstore hassle anymore, and neither will you if you join the club. Just go to DollarShaveClub.com and pick a razor that works for you from their amazing line of blades. That's really all there is to it. I get a first-class shave like I have right now when I use the Executive Blade. And with Dollar Shave Club, you can look, smell, and shave like $1 million without paying for it. At least, definitely not $1 million. Only a few bucks a month. Dollar Shave Club, that's what it's all about. And here's your chance to see why over 3 million members, like myself, love Dollar Shave Club. Dollar Shave Club is so confident in the quality of all their products, now you can get your first month of the club for free. Just pay the shipping. After that, just a few bucks a month. No long-term commitment, no hidden fees. There's no reason not to do it. So get yours today at dollarshaveclub.com/mayo. That's dollarshaveclub.com/mayo.
Wide receivers at the top. Michael Thomas, who is not owned in more than 60% of leagues, which I found somewhat shocking, is number one. He was number two last week. Now he's number one. Now we go to Ty Montgomery, and then we have Cole Beasley, Devonta Adams, Dante Moncrief, Jamison Crowder, Brian Quick, Russell Shepard, who we'll get to in a second, Brandon LaFell, and then Kenny Britt. Let's talk about the Packers guys, though, very briefly. We already kind of discussed Ty Montgomery and what his role can be going forward. Devonta Adams led the week in targets, which is shocking considering it's Devonta Adams. He wasn't even supposed to play in the game with a concussion. He was basically listed as doubtful, ends up getting upgraded to questionable like 2 hours before the game, then goes off and has the best performance of anyone during the week at receiver. What is his role? Because we kind of talk about him once every 2 weeks. Like whenever he has a good game, it's like, well, do you really want to play Devonta Adams? And I really don't going forward, despite the fact that he lit everything up on the Thursday night game. They don't get to play the Bears every single week, so that's probably not going to help his cause. But, like, Jordy Nelson's not getting held to one catch. Like, what do you do with Devonta Adams? Is he worth owning? Is he worth playing? Should you leave him for someone else? Like, I find the situation very confusing.
I think actually he's worth owning and playing until James Starks is back or they at least start running with Niall Davis, because if they're going to be throwing the ball 50 times a game, he's going to have value. And the biggest problem that we always say, and it's the reason we talk about him for 1 week and then don't for 2 weeks and then come back to him, is because he's the third wide receiver on a team. It's similar to the Giants situation, and now all of a sudden people are frustrated with Shepard and Cruz or any of these number of teams for the longest time with the Cardinals. Is somebody's always going to get left out, and usually more often than not, hey, guess what? It's the guy getting less snaps than the other two. It's the third option on the team. The thing about the Devonta Adams that I do like, though, is the complaint that we had from last year is that he couldn't run routes very well, and his hands stunk. Well, he's looked to improve in both areas, and similar to somebody like Jalen Strong who hasn't been able to, the skill, his natural ability has always been there. He just needs to improve in that facet, and he looked great in that game, and I agree with you. No, he's not going to face the Bears every single week. But that being said, if Aaron Rodgers is even throwing 40 times a game, there's probably a good chance Devonta Adams has some value in deeper leagues because they don't use the tight end that much. As we've seen with Cook earlier in this year and Rodgers of recent, they're hit or miss. They're just not a big tight end team. They've never been a really big tight end team. Even in Finley's best days, they weren't that big of a tight end team. So when you're in passing this much, I think he's going to have value. That being said, again, once they start running the ball a little bit more, you're going to say, all right, avoid the tough matchups, avoid the Vikings, avoid teams that have any semblance of a defense where the score might not be 50 combined points between the two teams.
Michael Thomas, number one on this list, coming off a career best day at the Chiefs. Your guy, Michael Thomas. And I think the big thing to know about it was the first time all season he played more than 80% of the Saints snaps, which is a very positive trend that you would hope would continue. So what do we make of Michael Thomas the rest of the season? Is he more valuable than Willie Snead? Is he, you know, just as good as Brandon Cooks when they play on the road? Is he a top 30 guy? Like, where does Michael Thomas shake out for you the rest of the season?
I think he is a top 30 guy, and I do think he's more valuable than Willie Snead. This is happening faster than I thought. And as you said, he was my guy. I was very high on him. I was expecting him to supplant Willie Snead as the number two option on this team, but I wasn't expecting it to happen this quickly. I'm going to be 100% honest about it. But as you well know, the reason I expected him to succeed, and I'm going to say it again, this is what I said in the preseason, is because he's filling Marcus Colston's role 100%. He is the new Marcus Colston, which is the slot flanker role in this offense, which has always been extremely productive with Drew Brees at quarterback. He fills the middle of the field. He fills the red zone option. And the best part about him, and what I said about him as a rookie coming out this year, was that he gets away from defenders because of his ability in running routes. He's one of the most precise route runners that we saw in the draft class. And that's the one thing that you can automatically attribute to the NFL where it comes to learning how to, you know, learn a playbook or separate. If you already got that down, which he does, you're going to succeed even if you're not the most athletic person. So he's filling Marcus Colston's role, which in this offense is going to have value. He's actually been the most consistent option, even ahead of Brandon Cooks. So yes, he deserves to be in the top 30, heck, probably even more like top 25, and has passed Willie Snead. There will be some off games because there's always off games with the Saints wide receivers. Look at Brandon Cooks. But I think that now you have to take him as a serious option going forward.
All right, I want to talk about Russell Shepard on the Bucks, who I basically did never heard of before yesterday. Vincent Jackson's out for the season with a torn ACL, so they need someone to man the outside. It was rumored, you know, Adam Humphries. Little Adam Humphries is going to be out there. Or Cecil Shorts. Little Cecil Shorts. Yeah, that wasn't the case. They went and found this Russell Shepard guy, a special teamer, who's kind of big. He's playing on the outside opposite Mike Evans, so he's getting the simplest coverage of all time. Ends up with 7 targets, catches 6 of them, ends up with a touchdown, 77 yards. That's not so bad. And when we talk about this a lot, a lot of people watching this are in deeper leagues. And I guarantee you that if, you know, I always say, you know, Michael Thomas probably owned in your league because he's very good. Montgomery was definitely picked up before the Thursday nighter. If you play in a serious league, no one owns Russell Shepard. No one. He is available this week. Do you think this is a spot he can continue to evolve with? Can he be the second option on this Bucs team that loves to pass the ball? Because if he does, he has 3 sweet matchups in a row against the Falcons, Bears, and the Raiders this week. As we keep talking about with Tampa, they get the Saints twice in the fantasy playoffs. Would it be worth gambling a roster spot on Russell Shepard in the off chance that he can actually do something being the wide receiver 2 in Tampa?
I definitely think he's worth a gamble on. You know, he dropped Kenneth Dixon for him, or people are along his ilk to drop for Shepard. If you have a free spot that maybe you just picked up somebody last week, like a Justin Hunter, in case he hits again, go ahead and drop him for the opportunity here. Because as you mentioned, the Adam Humphries talk I didn't get because he's a slot receiver. And you said it, little Adam Humphries, little Cecil Shorts. These are slot guys. These aren't guys that are meant to play on the outside. Shepard can handle that position a lot better than they can. I still struggle to have confidence in Jameis Winston every single week because you're always going to get bad Jameis every so now and then. But you just mentioned the schedule is great coming up where Shepard in deeper leagues. And again, we keep going back to it and we're going to hammer this point home by the end of the show. But 6 teams on bye the next 2 weeks, really nice matchups for the Bucs in the next 2 weeks. He could find your way into your lineup. He's going to be boom or bust. He could be a one-week wonder. Don't get me wrong. He could be the next Kevin Ogletree. But at the same time, on the opportunity, this is similar to DeAndre Washington a couple weeks ago. You have to take the chance on the opportunity alone. Because he could be a wide receiver 3/4, you have to take that chance. DeAndre Washington had the chance to be a top 15 running back. He completely failed. But that's what you do with these kind of guys. You take the chance.
Dante Moncrief in the shoulder could be back just before the Colts bye or maybe after in week 11. I'm picking up Dante Moncrief in all the leagues that he was dropped in. If you have like a stash guy on your bench, I think right now he's probably the best one, like even better than Deion Lewis, just because he's not practicing at the moment and he is so close to returning. I like him more than I like Corey Coleman, who could be back to practice this week as well. It's just, it's very clear, especially with the way that the Colts use Jack Doyle on Sunday, that they just need someone who's not 5'3" to be running around the field for them that Andrew Luck can throw to. Moncrief brings that back, and I think people forget how eerily consistent scoring touchdowns Moncrief was when he's healthy.
He's the Eric Decker for them. It is similar to what I said about the Jets last week, is we didn't realize what kind of impact Eric Decker was going to have on the offense. Well, I don't think anybody realized the kind of impact Dante Moncrief was going to have missing for the Colts offense. They started to pick things up the last few weeks, but you mentioned it, been a lot of tight end usage. Andrew Luck needs Dante Moncrief out there. He's a great complement to T.Y. Hilton. The problem with Philip Dorsett is what we said from day one. You just made a good joke about it, is when you have 80% of T.Y. Hilton and another wide receiver who's built the same fashion, it's pretty easy for the defense to take him away because it's, oh, look, we only have to plan for one kind of wide receiver. Very simple to do. Dante Moncrief is going to make this offense better. He's going to make Andrew Luck better, going to make everything better, honestly. And you said it, the touchdowns, similar to Eric Decker, very consistent at finding the end zone.
And if Dwayne Allen misses time again, that brings us to Jack Doyle, who ends up, you know, scoring the touchdown at the end. But he was having a really, really greasy PPR day anyway. He was getting his yardage forward to time. And you know what? In PPR leagues, I'm absolutely fine with that. But he heads up the tight end waiver wire pickup rankings. He's number one on that list. He's followed by Vernon Davis, Antonio Gates, Cameron Brait, Charles Clay, Lance Kendricks, Jacob Tammy, Ladarius Green, Eric Ebron, and Jesse James. If Dwayne Allen continues to miss time, Jack Doyle is a must-play every week, isn't he?
I would absolutely think so. But as you notice, hey, look who got involved early in the game, Mr. Eric Swoop. You can't discount the fact that you might get an off game from Jack Doyle and it's going to be all Swoop time. I don't think that's anything to say to pick up Swoop. I'm just saying you have to understand what you're getting into with the Colts and understand all the frustrations you felt at the beginning of the year with Dwayne Allen and saying, who the heck is this Jack Doyle guy taking away my Dwayne Allen value? It's probably going to happen with Swoop. That being said, as long as Dwayne Allen's out, yes, Jack Doyle is a tight end one, not only a must own, but a must start.
And Jordan Reed, it looks like he's going to be kept out until after week 10 with the concussion problems. The Skins travel to London, then they have a bye week, so you might want to keep him out for a little bit. If you need the plug and play, I like Doyle more, but Vernon Davis looks like he's going to be fine as a replacement, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The biggest concern was, oh, maybe Niles Paulsey is a little bit of involvement because that's what we saw last year. You just never know. But between after what happened last week with the two catches, 50 yards, and a touchdown, almost had a second one, and then the involvement yesterday, it's clear that he's the replacement for Jordan Reed. As long as Jordan Reed is out, Vernon Davis is in the tight end one conversation.
What does that do to Jamison Crowder then? Because we know in terms of like red zone targets that Jamison Crowder is still up there with double digits for the season. And he got back to double digit targets yesterday against the Lions, a team which is just brutal against the pass. I really expected Pierre Garçon to take a big leap forward, Mao style, up against the Lions. But, you know, it just never came to fruition. They just really went to Crowder over and over. Do you think that's a one-game blip? Garçon gets worked back in? Or is Garçon a guy to use while Reed is out?
No, I think it's more Jamison Crowder until Reed is back. It's just that's what he does is he absorbs the middle of the field and he gets all this value. And we talked about yesterday, if you look at earlier in the season, even some games that Jordan Reed did well in, Crowder did well in those matchups that are teams that allow that top opportunity like the Giants do, is where they give up a lot over the middle of the field and to tight ends. So even if Reed comes back, I still think Crowder is going to have value. I think that he's the more consistent, I think actually not more, he's the most consistent option on this offense, especially if you're talking about PPR. I think Garçon is probably going to show up maybe a week or two when he finds the end zone and gets a red zone option. But it's similar to go back to guys we talked about earlier where, you know, like Brandon LaFell's of the world is somebody that I just thought of off the top of my head. It's like, oh, look, Brandon LaFell had a good game. And then 3-4 weeks later, we're like, what happened to Brandon LaFell? Oh, look, he had another good game.
Lance Kendricks is the last tight end I want to talk about. He ends up, I mean, in terms of targets, he's up there inside the top five the last 2 weeks for all tight ends. But it seems like Case Keenum might end up riding the bench eventually. Although this is Jeff Fisher. They might just go sign some guy on the street and play instead of playing Jared Goff. But is Keenum's tied to Lance Kendricks, or is this just an offense which is kind of crappy, so they just throw to their tight end a lot?
Well, part of it was the matchups, too, especially yesterday. The Giants are really weak, as I just mentioned, over the middle of the field, and that's something they've given up to tight ends for most of the year and those slot receivers or middle-of-the-field receivers. So that's part of it, but at the same time, yes, Keenum has shown an efficiency for him, or an affinity for him, is he likes to throw to him. I think that if Keenum does lose the job, you have to take that into account because, as we've seen with the Chicago Bears, with the Browns, we don't know who these quarterbacks are going to come in and enjoy throwing the ball to or have any chemistry or rapport with. So you have to take that into account. And Lance Kendricks has really not done much for most of his career. He's always had that athletic ability where he creates mismatches, but he's never had that consistent option. So I think as long as Keenum's at quarterback, you could probably get him out there for during these tough bye weeks or in a matchup play, maybe you're streaming tight ends. But he's not somebody that I'm going to get excited about or even look to add.
Streaming defenses for the week, and this one gets a bit tricky depending on who's playing quarterback for the Browns because Cody Kessler is dealing with a concussion, can't see the lights, so if he was sitting here, he'd be all out of his mind. But he might not pass protocol and play against the Jets in Week 8, so that means your boy, the Konomi, whatever his name is, the Ninja, Hollywood Hogan version part 2, Like, what are the Browns doing? Is all the success Cleveland has had in football and basketball, or in baseball and basketball this year, just, you know, the anti that is the Browns quarterback situation?
That's where all the bad luck is going. They've just taken all the curse and all the bad will and all the unfortunate circumstances, just pushed it to the team. And I really think that's what it is. Like, how bad must it feel to be a Browns fan right now and seeing what's going on with the baseball team and the fact that the basketball team won a championship? But yes, the quarterback situation, I don't ever remember anything like this happening, where we're down to now the sixth quarterback starting, just with all the options, including because Terrell Pryor had been there at quarterback, or I should say taking snaps if you include him. But, you know, Hogan presents a different ability, but I don't remember him running this much at college. You know, maybe I missed those games, maybe, you know, because I can't watch all the tape on every single player in history, but I don't remember this being part of his game. So I don't know that I don't care really who's at quarterback. I still do like the Jets as a streaming defense this week because it is the Browns, and Terrell Pryor's not 100%, and what else do you really have here? Gary Barnage had a decent game, but it's really like, what are you worried about?
Yeah, so Kevin Hogan, if Brock Osweiler or Trevor Siemian don't do much on Monday night, he's going to finish as a top 10 quarterback for the week.
It's just insane. It's all the rushing yards, man.
And the rushing touchdown. That always goes right. A long way when it's worth 6 and the passing ones are worth 4. So the Jets against Cleveland is my top streamer for the week. And then I'm going to go with the Titans against the Jags on Thursday night. I like home teams. I mean, the Titans blew up in my face this week. I had them everywhere. They were not good against the Colts. Hopefully they can get back going against the Jags. Lions at Houston, just because, you know, play teams against Brock, that's usually a pretty good thing. Chargers at Denver. Falcons at home against Green Bay. Bears at home against Minnesota. Outside of the Jets and Titans, though, I'm not super comfortable with any of these defenses.
No, I'm not really excited about much of them either. And the thing is, I do like the Titans call because not just the way that Blake Bortles was playing so far. He's been a turnover machine himself. But you know, one thing you always like to do is you like to target teams that pass a lot, whether it's the game script or whether it's the team themselves. Because guess what? More passing, more opportunities for more interceptions. More interceptions, more chances to possibly run one in for a touchdown. So I do like the Titans this week, but I'm with you. If the third best option is the Lions and the Lions on the road, you know, again, Brock Osweiler could throw an interception and maybe you get one there. But if that's your third best option, not saying you, as in your problem for ranking them that way, but our third best option is just not very enticing.
I will say the Falcons defense, and almost to go back to your point a little bit, I mean, they gave up 33 points on Sunday to the Chargers. They finished the seventh highest scoring fantasy defense. So just giving up points and the other team's going to pass the ball 50 times, that's usually better than just having a team that, you know, doesn't do anything. Like, the Eagles were a weird exception, but I mean, how many points realistically did the Cardinals defense put up? It wasn't all that many, was it?
No, and that's the thing, is in fantasy, sometimes the best defense, or not sometimes, more often than not, the best defense as an NFL perspective isn't the best fantasy option, because holding a team to 6-10 points, and if you're not getting a lot of interceptions or you don't get the defensive touchdown, it doesn't really do much for you in fantasy. Like, what do you get, 4 points for holding a team to 10? It doesn't add up fantasy-wise.
Yeah, and that's what happened. The Cardinals finished with the 14th best defense of the week. They gave up 6 points. They had one sack. Well, thanks for coming out, Cardinals defense. And it's weird that the Falcons defense is starting to get to the quarterback, though, which is somewhat shocking. I don't think it really happens against Green Bay, because pass blocking wise, the Packers have been very good. And now that they're throwing the ball, you know, 1,000 times a game, they're getting the ball out very quickly, not allowing a lot of chances for the defenses to get to them. But if they're going to generate a little bit of pressure and do force them to pass, there are opportunities, because Rodgers, you know, he hasn't been great. He looked better Thursday night, but not every defense is the Bears. Not to say that Atlanta's defense is good by any means. It's not. It's kind of terrible. But they're going to have opportunities to take the ball away, aren't they?
Yeah, I agree with you. And it'd be the same thing, like, if the Giants weren't on by a team facing the Giants because of how much they pass. And if we've seen, you know, Eli Manning, whether or not he's getting the touchdowns, is probably going to throw a pick or two. It's just the opportunity that's there. Yes, it could blow up in your face. And if you're in a league where it gets pretty aggressive for negative points, for points allowed to the opposing team, I might be a little bit more hesitant. Like, if it's one of those ones where it starts at 28 and it starts going like -3, -7, -10. Some leagues are like that and a little bit excessive in that fashion. If you're in that type of league, obviously stay away from it. But if you're in one where it doesn't penalize you that much, you go for that opportunity here, because just one interception for a touchdown, just one, is going to make them probably a top 12 defense.
Quarterbacks, the streamers of the week, when we get round this out, Jameis Winston is at home against Oakland. I mean, it sounded pretty good for Blake Bortles on Sunday. It didn't turn out to be the case. Jameis, I think, can actually come through in this spot. Ryan Fitzpatrick, the Fitzmagic, back at number two. He's going to be starting for the Jets. He gets the Browns. The Browns have not given up fewer than two passing touchdowns in any game this season. I don't think any quarterback has scored less than 17 points against them. Listen, I know you probably don't want to start Ryan Fitzpatrick, but he's coming at number two on my list. Then Marcus Mariota against the Jags on Thursday night. Tyrod Taylor against the Patriots at home. Alex Smith at Indy in a nice matchup. And then Sam Bradford in a weaker matchup, although he's still Sam Bradford. He's at Chicago. And it just might be Matt Asiata in the backfield and then, you know, Kyle Rudolph running around like a crazy person. Besides Jameis, do you have a strong feeling about any of these guys?
I like Mariota a little bit more than Fitzpatrick just because, and he didn't rush very much yesterday, but that appeal is still there from the two games prior, and all it takes is 40 rushing yards and you just got yourself a free touchdown. I'm not going to complain, though, that much because you just mentioned all the numbers that the Browns have given up. They haven't stopped anybody. I like Brandon Marshall in this game, especially for like a DFS purpose. If you're looking at somebody that might have some value because people are going to say, I don't know if I want to play anything in this offense with Ryan Fitzpatrick at quarterback. I do like your point, so I wouldn't even argue with you that much. Actually, I'm going to flip this around and ask you the question because obviously he's owned by a lot higher percentage, but people probably don't want to start him. You'd probably start Fitzpatrick over Bortles at this point, wouldn't you?
This week I would, for sure, yeah.
Yeah. I think you have to.
Man, Bortles has been so bad. And you know what? You know who else has been bad? Because I don't want to throw all this on Bortles. Allen Robinson has been terrible.
I think a lot of it has to do with Bortles.
Over the past two games, Allen Robinson has tipped two passes that he should have caught into the hands of the defenders. One of them was a touchdown.
Bortles is not helping him, but I'll agree that something is off with Allen Robinson. I don't know if he's masking an injury, if maybe he got lackadaisical in the offseason and didn't take himself seriously. He's taking a step back. I do not get it. I've always loved his talent. You know that. With Jason Braddock, all the rest of us talking about him for all these years. Something's not right. And yes, you're right. You can't put it all on Bortles no matter how terrible he's been because, you know what? Marquise Lee is doing just fine.
Yeah, Marquise Lee is the most valuable guy on this team right now.
He's been the most consistent option, which is that's the opposite. This is somebody who didn't take it seriously coming out of college, rounded off his routes, was relying purely on athletic ability, has finally started to take it seriously, has started to learn his route running ability, and look what's happening. He's the most reliable option on this team by far.
Who do you think leads the league in targets right now?
Overall
wide receiver. There's two guys.
I think Crowder has to be up there, no?
No, it's Antonio Brown and T.Y. Hilton. T.Y. Hilton only has one game of less than 10 targets so far. And then it's Mike Evans. How good is Mike Evans? The guy I want to talk about, because you mentioned Brandon Marshall, 68 targets. Even when Geno was in there, he was still getting the ball. Now, these weren't the highest quality of throws, but I think that a lot of people are going to be down on Brandon Marshall after a few, you know, not so great weeks. Where do you think he ends up the rest of the season? He's still a top 10 guy, right?
I think he has to be, just because we're now talking about the DeAndre Hopkins type of situation from last year. He's just going to see such a volume share of this offense that he's going to be there, given his talent, given the opportunities, and then if the touchdowns are coming at all, it's just the share. It's just a workload. It's going to cause him to be inside the top 10 by volume alone, and he's a supremely talented wide receiver, which only helps his case.
Jake Seeley, check him out on Twitter, @AllInKid, and check out all of his work up on rotoexperts.com. Thanks for being here, Jake.
As always.
All right, I'm Pat Mayo. You can follow me at @ThePME on Twitter, and remember to subscribe to the Pat Mayo Hour wherever multimedia lives. I'm Pat Mayo. Good luck in week 8. I'll see you next time.